Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Thursday's UFC Fight Night 90 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium bets for UFC Fight Night 89 went 2-2 to profit 1.52 units overall. We went into more detail on all the picks and what won and what lost in our UFC 200 podcast, so check that one out if you're interested. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 90 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired exclusively on UFC Fight Pass this Thursday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a welterweight contest between Vicente Luque, who is 8-5-1, and Alvaro Herrera, who is 9-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Luque, -380, the comeback on Herrera, +260. And right now it's Luque sitting at -450 at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. So make sure you guys check those guys out. And right now Herrera is +360. So a little bit more action coming in Luque's way. I had to open him fairly decent because honestly, if you take his actual record aside, I mean, I know it's not overwhelming. He's got a bunch of losses. I mean, you could, different places have different records or whatever, but I got Luque at around 8-5-1 right now. So he's a lot better than his record indicates. The guy's a very well-rounded, talented fighter in all aspects of the game. He's a smart fighter. I've been nothing but impressed with him, honestly, and I think he's going to continue to get better and better, get more confidence. He's still only 24 years old, so there's a lot of good things to look at when you're talking about a guy like Luque. Now, Herrera, on the other hand, obviously he's an Ultimate Fighter veteran. The guy's okay as far as he's still young enough, and he's still kind of building his overall game in MMA. He's a big, strong welterweight. He's got that going for him, does have a lot of power. He's training at a good camp right now at Greg Jackson's. And he's coming off a pretty decent KO win in his official debut at Fight Night 78 over Ramos. So this guy definitely is a heavy hitter, but he has a lot of flaws in his game, and he still needs to develop overall. I think Luque across the board is actually a better fighter. I think Luque is a better technical striker. I think he's a better submission guy. He's a better wrestler. So all the check marks point to Luque. That's why I had to open him a decent favor, and that's why people are probably – you know, hitting him straight a little bit and definitely putting him in a parlay. That's why you're seeing the line increase a little bit. So for Herrera to win, he needs to knock Luque out, I think. He needs to finish Luque. Luque has a pretty good chin. I don't think Herrera is going to win on the scorecards, and I don't think he knocks him out. So I think Luque actually finishes Herrera. I think he does find a spot probably on the ground where he gets positioned and probably subs out Herrera and gets the W that way. If not, if this happens to go to the scorecards, which I doubt, I think Luque wins on the scorecards anyway. So Luque is the better fighter. I think Herrera is going to have to get lucky and basically catch him with a kind of a puncher's type of chance. Outside of that, Luque is my pick, and I'm pretty confident he wins here.
Luque looked amazing in his last fight, just completely dominating in that rematch. But Alvaro Herrera is definitely dangerous. You saw that in his UFC debut. The battle, he was looking for the left hook on a counter and instead just decided to be more aggressive and step forward and landed a couple big right hands and made his opponent face plant. So Herrera definitely has power. He also does have some submissions on his record, but for the most part, I do think that if he's going to win this fight, it's going to be on the feet. Herrera has that ability to potentially change this game at least in this fight, with his hands. On the ground, while Herrera has some ability there, Luque should be significantly better. He's much more seasoned, trains in a better environment, and I just expect Luque to dominate if the fight hits the floor. Now, on the feet, the reaches are about the same, but Luque is a little bit more technical. He just has to avoid getting sloppy because Herrera will be looking for that left hook counter. And
overall, I just don't really expect a lot out of Herrera. He does have the power, but that's about it. That's really the only threat he has. And as long as Luque doesn't do anything stupid, doesn't leave himself exposed by getting over-aggressive or overconfident, then he should definitely win this fight, especially if he can drag it to the floor. So my pick is going to be Vicente Luque. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Marco Beltran, who is 7-4, taking on Reginaldo Vieira, who is 14-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Vieira minus 175, the comeback on Beltran plus 135. Right now looking over 5 dimes. Vieira minus 145, the comeback on Beltran is plus 125. So line margins have tightened up a little bit and a 10 cent drop in the dog. This is a tough fight because honestly, both these guys are obviously pretty flawed overall. Both these guys are Ultimate Fighter veterans as well. And both of these guys, again, are at the point where they could definitely improve, get a little bit more confidence in, and they're doing that since the show. For sure. Vieira obviously is an Ultimate Fighter winner. He was impressive in his fight over Lopez winning the crown. I was a little bit surprised. I thought Lopez was honestly going to beat him, but Vieira showed up and he fought very well and he showed us what he's capable of. And I think he could actually, again, keep on improving from there. He's got a lot of power on the feet. He's got a bit of a wrestling ground game. I mean, he's a pretty well-rounded fighter. I mean, that favors his submission game more than anything else, but he's more than just a submission fighter. So Vieira is a powerful little guy that can definitely end fights in several ways. Now, Beltran, a little bit underrated in his own right. He's going to be longer here in this fight. I think he had a very tough, hard-fought battle in that his split decision win over Ning. And that's going to be crucial here as well because Vieira, I guess, is similar in that way because he's a little powerhouse as well. He's going to look to push a little bit of a pace. And Beltran was able to adapt and do well in that fight. So I think Beltran overall, his skill set with that length, with that reach, he's going to want to probably try to pick Vieira apart a little bit. On the ground, Beltran has a little bit of game as well. He's capable of finishing the fight by submissions. But more than anything else, I think he's going to probably have to outpoint Vieira here to get the W if he does it. And I think that's going to kind of be tough. So in my opinion, this is a very tough fight to call because both these guys are so flawed, especially defensively, that really it's a coin flip to me. But I'm going to lean with Vieira a little bit more. I just think at this point, he's just a little bit further ahead of Beltran. I think minus him making a crucial mistake in a fight, if it does hit the scorecards, it probably favors him as well. So I'm going to go that way. But this is not one that's a confident pick for me, honestly. So my official lean is Vieira.
Yeah, Vieira definitely caught me off guard a little bit with his performance on the finale, basically, of The Ultimate Fighter, which ended up being UFC 190. And Beltran, again, another surprise. I really thought that he would probably lose both of his UFC fights, and he's come through and picked up decisions. They've been close. He's really had to grind them out almost, but he's been able to pull them off. Now, he hasn't exactly faced top-tier competition yet with Marlon Vera and Nyungun Yu in his two fights, and Vieira isn't top-tier either, but I do think Vieira definitely does pose a threat. I think Vieira is a little bit more technical than Beltran. Beltran relies a little bit on guts, but Beltran does have one advantage is he's been working in Chicago training there. He's not just training in Mexico City. So I do think that he is putting in some time in the United States. That's definitely going to help him out a little bit. And that being said, Vieira looked really good the last time we saw him. Surprised me with his improvements. He can pretty much take this fight anywhere. I do expect him to have a little bit of an advantage on the ground. On the feet, he probably can't hold his own with Beltran. Beltran is a bit wild and reckless on the feet, but he makes it work. So Vieira will have to be a little more cautious in stand-up exchanges. But I think if Vieira can get this fight to the floor, if he can secure top position, he could be in a decent position to win this fight, but he could also win a stand-up fight. Because Beltran is a little so sloppy and reckless, Vieira could have some openings there as well. So I'm leaning Vieira. I'm not confident about it, but I do think that he might be able to pull this one off. But this fight should be really close. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Gilbert Burns, who is 10-1, taking on Lucas Sejewski, who is 13-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Burns -190, the comeback on Sujewski +150. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is Burns -250. The comeback on Sujewski is +210. So right now, everybody is parlaying Burns, coming in straight early on Burns as well. No confidence in Sujewski that much at all. I understand. I mean, his debut was against Hine and he got beat by Hine. It was competitive, fairly competitive fight. So I think a lot of people are expecting Burns to bounce back from his difficult loss to Magomedov. I mean, he definitely got torched in that fight a little bit, and Sujewski is definitely a step down for Burns, and Sujewski, or Burns for Sujewski is, I mean, it's a tough matchup stylistically for a lot of people. Burns is just such a devastating fighter, especially on the ground. I mean, his stand-up's not bad. He's going to obviously get picked apart by better strikers, and that's the case against Magomedov, but overall, Burns has a bit of a stand-up game. He's definitely capable of outpointing people on the feet, but more so than anything, I mean, he's the type of guy that wants to get the fight to the ground, and once on the ground, he's a special grappler. I mean, a lot of people cannot survive on the ground against Burns, so his submission game's on point. He doesn't need a lot of time to work. I mean, look at the Oliveira fight. He was losing that fight. He had to get the fight to the ground and win it and finish it that way, and he did it. So Burns is capable of pulling fights off, even when behind. That's how good and dominant his ground game is. So Sujewski has to be very careful, and we have to think that Sujewski understands that and what he's up against with Burns. So he's going to have to fend off some takedown attempts. And if he's capable or if he's able to do that, I think this is going to be a very competitive fight. And Sujewski could possibly pull off the win here against Burns, because on the feet, I do think it's going to be competitive, but I honestly give Sujewski a little bit of an edge. I think his precision's a little bit better than Burns. I think he's a little bit more aggressive at times. I know, again, that's actually his kryptonite. I mean, at times Sujewski actually gets a little bit tentative, and that bothers me some, but when he does put his foot on the gas, he's smart enough and he makes enough of an impact when he does it that he can definitely do some damage along the way, and even possibly pin Burns up against a cage and kind of control the tempo of the fight. He just has to be careful to not get on the ground or spend too much time on the ground. And Sujewski is a very capable grappler in his own right, so I'm not saying that he doesn't have skill on the ground. I mean, the guy is capable of finishing the fight on the ground, but against a guy like Burns with that level, and you don't want to compete in that realm with Burns. You want to keep it upright and you want to try to kind of outpoint him and make this kind of a slow paced, methodical type of fight. So this is a tough one for me, because I think the line, honestly, right now where it's at is a little bit overinflated. I do lean a little bit more towards Burns, because I think if it hits the scorecards, it will be competitive. Burns can hang in there a little bit with Sujewski as well. And if it doesn't hit the scorecards, I think Burns can obviously sub him on the ground. So I'm going to pick him, but I'm not ultra confident in it, because I think if it hits the scorecards, it is going to be close enough. And again, the line's a little bit inflated, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if Sujewski pulls off the decision win here. So tentative lean is towards Burns. I know everybody else is a lot more confident than I, but that's just how I feel about this fight.
Yeah, I'm not feeling Sujewski here. The main problem is a lot of the strengths that Lucas Sujewski has are on the ground, whether he's able to secure takedowns, whether he's able to get some submissions, whether he's able to start pounding away from top position. I would say about 75% of his game is based on getting takedowns in top position, and that's not going to work against Gilbert Burns. Gilbert Burns is an elite Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist, and if he gets taken down, I think he sweeps him or submits him. If Burns gets in top position, look out. I think Sujewski would be in huge trouble. So that means Sujewski is going to have to try to win this fight in the stand-up portion or in the clinch. You did see in his UFC debut against Nick Hine, Sujewski is a very physically strong fighter. He could be able to push Burns around a little bit if he's very aggressive and maybe pin him against the fence. And I think that's where he can do the most damage, on the inside against the fence, or just by getting that positional advantage and maybe landing some short, dirty boxing, just getting something going on the inside. Because Gilbert Burns is a decent striker. Now, he's had his trouble against guys like Rashid Magomedov and Alex Oliveira from distance, but Sujewski is not either of those guys. Sujewski is a respectable striker, but no better than average. And Gilbert Burns should be able to hold his own there. I think the striking exchanges in this fight will be evenly matched. And honestly, if this fight goes to the ground, it's all Gilbert Burns, even though Sujewski does have some experience there. So realistically, if Gilbert Burns can get anything going whatsoever, he should be able to win this fight. If he starts winning the stand-up, he'll just win it harder. If he gets a takedown, he's in great shape. If he gets taken down, I expect him to pull something off from his back. So there just aren't a lot of places here for Sijewski to succeed. So I think that really lowers his odds, and that's why you're seeing Gilbert Burns being so popular with the public. So I'm going to lean with Gilbert Burns. I do think he's a little overrated and has not lived up to some of the expectations we've given him, but this is definitely a winnable fight for him. So my pick is going to be Gilbert Burns. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Felipe Arantes, who is 17-7-1 with two no contests, taking on Gerard Sanders, who is 15-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Arantes, -210, the comeback on Sanders, +160, and action has come in on Sanders. It's right now, it's Arantes, -165, comeback on Sanders is +145. So wrestling is the key here for Sanders, and that's what everybody is believing and coming in that way. It has to be, because obviously other than that, Arantes has Sanders beat pretty much across the board in all areas. So Sanders' grappling is definitely decent. I mean, he's a grinder, he's a wrestler. He has a very impressive win and a much-needed win over Doan in his last fight. So that was pretty impressive. He was a decent dog in that spot as well. So I think he gained a lot of respect from people and, you know, fighting again at 135 against Arantes. He could get some takedowns here. Arantes has been hindered by that in the past. He has been put on his back control a little bit, and that's exactly what Sanders is looking to do. So a lot of people are believing that Sanders is going to get the job done here, get him down and basically out-wrestle Arantes. I'm not so sure. I think Arantes is definitely the better overall fighter. He's a more dangerous fighter everywhere the fight takes place. Obviously on the feet, he's got a big edge. He's got the experience. His wrestling has actually improved as well. And then his submission game is a little bit better. So I think Arantes can probably fend off some takedowns. He might end up on his back. I'm not sure if Sanders is going to be able to keep him and smother him there and control him the entire time. And Arantes is going to probably have enough spots where he's off his back, and he's going to make life miserable for Sanders once that happens. So in a 3-round fight, I think along the way, Arantes probably ends up catching Sanders and finishing him here. But again, I'm going against the grain because most of the public out there, most of the early betting action has come in on Sanders, and they're very confident. So I'm not that confident in Sanders quite yet. I know he does have a path to victory there, but so does Arantes in a lot of ways. So I'm going to go with the younger fighter, even though in fight years, Arantes has a ton of experience, but I still think he's still at that spot where he's a little bit more youthful. He's just a little bit better overall, and he's probably going to find a finish along the way. So my pick is going to be Arantes going against the grain.
Realistically, Gerard Sanders is a very one-dimensional fighter. He is a good wrestler, and he's hard-nosed, and he presses the action. He's not exactly a big threat on the feet, although his stand-up got a little bit better in his last fight against Russell Doan. But for the most part, this is a guy that wants to take you down, and then he works for ground and pound and to stay and to be busy enough to stay in top position to win the fight. And Felipe Arantes is significantly more well-rounded than him. Arantes is definitely the better stand-up artist. He's better with submissions, and he's pretty good scrambler on the ground. And he's typically shown some pretty good wrestling, although he did get out. He lost some grappling exchanges and scrambles against Andre Feely at featherweight before dropping down. Even in his last fight, when he was on his back, he picked up a triangle choke submission over Eve Jebwe. So even if Gerard Sanders gets those takedowns, I think he's going to be in and out of submission trouble the whole way through. Sanders can pull this off. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he can take Arantes down and wear him out and grind him out over 3 rounds with his wrestling, because that has been a tried and true method for wrestlers to win fights throughout the history of the UFC. But I just think the threat of the finish from Arantes is going to be much higher. The fact that Sanders has put himself in bad positions in the past, I mean, obviously fighting out of his weight class in his UFC debut against Cedeño, and he got mauled, and then the fight against Pedro Munhoz, where he just dove right into a guillotine choke. He can definitely be finished very quickly. So I expect Felipe Arantes at some point to pick up the finish. So my pick is going to be Felipe Arantes. Now sticking with the bantamweight division, we have Russell Doan, who is 14-5, taking on Pedro Munhoz, who is 11-2 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Munhoz -265, the comeback on Doan, +185. Right now it is Munhoz -235, the comeback on Doan is +195. So line margins kind of tightened up a little bit. There was early action coming in on Doan early action then turned towards Munhoz as well. So we have a ways to go. This is about a week out or so from the fight. So there's going to be a lot of action going back and forth, I'm sure, on this fight. I do lean towards Munhoz in this spot. I think Doan is a very talented fighter, well-rounded fighter. He's not an easy out, but I just don't see any area against Munhoz that he is better than Munhoz. I mean, on the ground, Munhoz is, even though Doan has some skill, definitely, he's got some submission skill, I think Munhoz beats him on the ground. I think standing up, Munhoz is a little bit more precise. He's got some speed. He's got more capable knockout power. So everywhere the fight takes place, including the wrestling, I think the wrestling's going to be close. I mean, Doan is a capable wrestler at times, so it's going to be interesting to see who actually has a real wrestling advantage in this spot. But I think that kind of neutralizes each other out as well. So I think a lot of this fight probably takes place upright, and that definitely favors Munhoz in this spot as well. So the only advantage, I guess, that I could see on paper for Doan in this spot would be his reach. I mean, he's going to have like a 4 or 5 inch reach advantage over Munhoz, but Munhoz has been the shorter guy and kind of used to adapting in that circumstance as well. So this is probably going to be a tough fight for Doan. I know Munhoz is coming off a very tough, hard fought battle. And he lost a split decision to Rivera. I mean, that was an excellent fight. And then Doan is going to be hungry, of course, because he's coming off back-to-back losses to Sanders and Alcantara. So he's looking to get back on track here against a very respectable opponent in Munhoz. I mean, if Doan is able to pull this upset off, I mean, he is definitely back on track, and it's quite a notch on his resume, but I don't think he's going to do it. I think, again, Munhoz is just going to be a little bit better than him on the feet. He's just a little bit more dangerous overall, and I trust him a little bit more. I think Munhoz has a better chin. He's got better sub defense. I mean, just across the board, I think the check marks kind of point to Munhoz. So where the line is now, it is kind of tough. I mean, because it probably will be a competitive fight. And if it hits the scorecards with judging and everything that kind of you have to add into the equation, it probably will be competitive. So do you want to really lay about 2.5 to 1 in this spot? It's kind of tough. But at the same time, it is tempting because I do think Munhoz is a better fighter. So I'm going to go his way.
Yeah, realistically, I just think Russell Doan's going to be in big trouble in this fight. Pedro Munhoz hasn't had the best run of luck in the UFC with his drug test, with his loss to Jimmy Rivera, with a loss to Sun Tzu. But that being said, Munhoz is light years better than Russell Doan. Doan, honestly, his game is predicated on him getting takedowns, him getting top position, whether he's looking for a submission or to ground and pound his opponent. When he's on the feet, he usually just gets outstruck. And Pedro Munhoz definitely does have some fast hands. He's working at King's MMA. He's getting better. I mean, that fight against Jimmy Rivera was a back-and-forth fight of the year candidate. Just incredible. And there's no way Russell Doan would have been able to hang with Munhoz in a fight like that. And on the ground, Munhoz is legit incredibly talented. So if Doan does try to get this fight to the floor where he usually is able to win fights, Munhoz is going to eat him for lunch there too. There really aren't many places here for Doan to win this fight unless he connects with something like a lucky punch or something. And even then, Munhoz, while he did get rocked and hurt a couple times against Rivera, I don't think his chin is that bad. It's just he was in a firefight. So I expect Pedro Munhoz to win this fight however he likes it. Whether he wants to keep it standing or if he wants to pick up a submission, I think he wins, and he probably picks up a finish along the way. So my pick is going to be Pedro Munhoz. Now, again, sticking with the bantamweight division, we have Anthony Burchak, who is 12-3, taking on Delano Lopez, who is 19-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Burchak -210, the comeback on Lopez +160, and early action has come in on Burchak. It's now -255 for Burchak. Lopez is +215. So Burchak getting the respect, Lopez not getting that respect. I mean, his loss to Vieira in the tough finale at UFC 190 kind of cost him a little bit. I mean, Lopez is one of those guys that I thought, I mean, still fairly young at age 28. He has a very capable MMA game in all areas. I mean, he's a little powerhouse. He can definitely make his opponents suffer on the feet. I mean, he has knockout power. He's got aggressive instinct and then on the ground as well. He's got a good sub game. He's hard to sub himself. He's defensively, he's pretty good. He's just got a complete game, but he is very hittable. And obviously, I mean, Vieira proved that, you know, he could beat him on the scorecards as well. So he's beatable. And Berchek at the same time, he's coming off a very tough loss to Almeida. He was very confident going into that fight, but Almeida is definitely one of the elite strikers at 135, despite his recent loss to Garbrandt. I mean, Almeida still offensively, man, not many people can take the punishment Almeida dishes out. So Berchek losing to Almeida in the fashion that he did is not even a surprise to most of us, because Almeida could do that to a lot of people. But that being said, he is 1-2 Berchek in the UFC. I mean, he beat Soto, but lost to Entwistle and Almeida. So Entwistle, of course, the submission specialist, the leg lock specialist, Berchek got caught up in that game. I'm still surprised that he did get caught up in that game, but Entwistle is one of those guys that there's not much you could do. You know it's coming, and I mean, he's that good at what he does. He's kind of a one-trick pony like that. So those losses, I guess you can understand them a little bit. I'm trying to make a case for Berchek here, but overall, he's still 1-2 in the UFC, and he needs this win bad because he's a very talented fighter overall. He's got a little bit of power on the feet. He's getting a little bit more technical. Obviously, Berchek, in my opinion, the best part of his game is his grinding style. He can get the fight to the floor, out-wrestle most of his opponents, and then he can win by sub as well. Now, defensively, there are some concerns. I mean, obviously, he's hittable on the feet a little bit, and he has been subbed a couple times, so he's got some flaws there, but overall, his size is going to impact this fight a little bit. He's going to be the bigger, stronger fighter. I think he should be able to control this fight, pinning Lopez up against the cage a little bit, looking for some takedowns and probably getting superior position on the ground as well. So I do lean towards Berchek in this fight, but both these guys are going to be hungry after they come off a loss like they have. And I think both these guys are talented enough. It's hard to count Lopez out in this spot either. So this is going to be a pretty competitive fight, I think, overall. I'm going to lean towards Berchek a little bit. Again, I think the size will matter in this fight. So I'm going to lean towards him because I think he does bounce back and get the W here. But Lopez is going to be game. And I think as Lopez is better than what he showed in his last fight, and he will get some wins in the UFC here soon, but it might not be this fight. So I am going to pick Berchek to get the W here.
Yeah, this is kind of the battle of the disappointments. Delano Lopez was expected to win Tough Brazil 4 and laid an egg and ended up losing in the finale on UFC 190. And Anthony Berchek came in as, you know, a kind of a super prospect and probably got submitted and then did pick up a win and then got knocked out. So all of his fights have taken place very quickly and they have all ended violently. And this time around, I do think Berchek is going to continue that stretch of super aggression. And I think that should help him. Delano Lopez is not a very big fighter. Berchek should have 4 inches of reach on him. Berchek's 3 inches taller. And with his aggression, I think that he can just push forward, land some big punches, maybe get some takedowns. And as long as he's the aggressor and the one dictating everything, he should be in pretty good shape. Berchek is a very talented guy. He's got power on the feet. He's able to pull off submissions. And while Lopez is very well-rounded, I mean, you don't get to 19-1 for nothing. But Lopez, a lot of those wins were not against high-quality competition. And I mean, I can't blame him for getting knocked out by Thomas Almeida. I mean, that guy was a top five ranked bantamweight by the time he was done with him. So Berchek is, as long as he doesn't come out gun-shy or anything after getting knocked out, then he should be in decent shape. So while Lopez is well-rounded and he's better than he showed, I think Berchek pushes a high tempo and just tries to get Lopez off of his game quickly and make this more of a firefight on the feet or get top position on the ground. And wherever this goes, I do think Berchek should have a slight advantage everywhere, especially with his size. So my pick is going to be Anthony Berchek. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have John McDessie, who is 12-5, taking on Mehdi Baghdad, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in McDessie, -185, the comeback on Baghdad, +145. Right now, looking over five dimes, McDessie, -145, Baghdad is +125. And some recent action just coming in actually on Baghdad as well. So it was holding steady recently till, again, before the podcast actually. It looks like there's getting some trickles of dog action. I'm a little surprised and a little disappointed because I think it's pretty sharp, to be honest with you, overall. I think this is a striker versus striker matchup. And obviously, Baghdad might not get the hype or the recognition that McDessie does in this matchup here, but realistically, he's the longer striker. He's a very technical striker, has a ton of power in his own right. This is going to be a tough matchup for McDessie. Now, McDessie is definitely a little sniper. I mean, I'm more than impressed with his striking skill overall. He's technical. He's got speed. He's got a chin overall. I mean, there's a lot of good things to like. I know that Cerrone ended up busting that chin, but I'm just saying overall, I mean, he's a tough guy. He's a tough guy to get out of there as well. And you know what you're getting for him. He's going to push a pace. He's going to do a lot of good things in a 3-round fight. But I just think that he has struggled with some longer fighters as of late. I know he's won a couple of those fights as well. So he's used to fighting the kind of long rangy strikers, but I think Baghdad is technically speaking, he's probably one of the better strikers that he's faced as of late. So this is going to be a tough matchup. I mean, both these guys are going to be landing decent clean shots on each other. And I just think that Baghdad's probably going to be the one along the way that's going to be maybe landing a little bit more frequently with more devastating blows. And McDessie, I don't know. I mean, it's at that spot where I think that he's might be showing a little bit of a sign of decline. It's hard to say that, but I mean, I think he should have won that fight against Medeiros. I mean, it was a close fight and he lost by split decision. So it could have realistically went either way, but I mean, he has back to back losses now and he's lost 3 out of his last 4. So mentally, where is he at? I know he's got some personal stuff going on. I mean, I'm not sure what you're getting with McDessie right now. So it will be a competitive fight. It wouldn't surprise me at all if McDessie goes out there and even lands and knocks Baghdad out, because Baghdad has a couple of knockout losses on his resume and McDessie is that special of a striker. But in this scenario right now at this time, I think that Baghdad's going to show up, and obviously he needs to win this fight to stay relevant, to keep his job in the UFC, where McDessie, even though he's lost 3 out of his last 4, I think for some reason in my head, I think that he's got a little bit more job security still. I mean, despite even if he loses this fight, I think the UFC might bring him back again and, you know, try to get him back on track here. But Baghdad definitely needs to get this fight won. And we can't forget also that on the ground, Baghdad is not awful. I mean, it's not out of the realm that he gets McDessie to the ground, even though McDessie has decent takedown defense and it doesn't happen very often. I mean, during a scramble or McDessie makes a mistake, I wouldn't be shocked if Baghdad even maybe looks for a sub. But again, this is a striker versus striker matchup. I realize that. I'm going to go with the longer striker, and I'm going to go with a person right now that I think really does have an edge over McDessie, and that's Baghdad. So that's going to be my official pick. It is a close fight. I've been going kind of back and forth on this myself, honestly, but I will lean Baghdad in this spot.
This fight should be very competitive. John McDessie is an excellent striker, and he has been very inconsistent against other strikers that he's been matched up with. Sometimes you'll see him go out there and take care of business like he did against Shane Campbell. But then other times, whether it was his most recent bout against Deontay Medeiros or maybe even the fight against Alan Patrick, he just doesn't push the pace enough and lets his opponent dictate things and ends up losing decisions that he should win. Now, Mehdi Baghdad is not nearly in as much trouble. He's going to be a lot more comfortable this time around because McDessie doesn't really look for takedowns. He's more of a guy that wants to stand and utilize his excellent Taekwondo skills. So Mehdi Baghdad is going to have about 7 inches in reach on McDessie, and he definitely does not have to worry about the takedown like he did in the Chris Wade fight, where he got put on his back quickly and then submitted. Wade is a great wrestler and was just able to overpower him. So I think this fight's going to be a lot more competitive. It's going to be very back and forth. But one thing that is kind of leaning me more towards McDessie is he's been in these situations before. He has experience against excellent strikers already, like, you know, Donald Cerrone. And while he didn't win that fight, you know, he was right in there and was making it interesting before breaking his jaw. So I think McDessie is going to learn from some of his mistakes. And while I do expect this fight to be extremely close, I am slightly leaning John McDessie because of his experience and his technical skill will hopefully make up for the size disadvantage. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Mike Pyle, who is 27-11-1, taking on Alberto Mena, who is 12-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Mena -140, the comeback on Pyle, even money. And right now, looking over five dimes, is Pyle -120. Mena is even money. So the public basically flipped the line. This line, again, is one of those that's going to keep on bouncing back and forth because there's going to be a lot of split opinions out there on this fight. Not going to understand it because it is basically a true pick'em type of fight. It's tough because Pyle is by far the more experienced veteran that has faced everybody there is basically to face, throughout his career, the best of the best. His resume speaks for itself overall. Now, he's lost a lot of those fights to the elite level fighters, but he's also racked up quite a few quality wins. I mean, his last fight against Spencer, wow. I mean, that was pretty impressive, especially at age 40. I mean, it's remarkable what he's able to do. And I think actually at this point of Pyle's career, mentally, he's never been better. I mean, he doesn't put that kind of pressure on himself that he did, I think, early on in his career. If you remember, I mean, even when he first made it over to the UFC, I think the mental aspect of the game for Pyle is really what restricted him. I mean, he had the skill on the feet to compete with a lot of guys. He had the wrestling to compete. And obviously, he's got the submissions, too, to do well. It's just I think he mentally wasn't prepared as he is now. So these days, even though he's kind of past his prime, obviously, at age 40, and it's unfortunate, his mental state has kind of caught up to his skill set. And that's why you're seeing him still have success late in his career like he is now. But that being said, his chin is still suspect. Mena is an aggressive type of fighter that can definitely test that chin and put him out. And then Mena, honestly, on the ground is no slouch either. So I wouldn't even be surprised if Mena gets Pyle's back and maybe submits him there during a crazy exchange. Now, of course, Pyle has a lethal submission game offensively, but he has been subbed in the past. And Mena's the type of fighter that, again, he's a finisher. I mean, he's able to get the job done on the feet. He's able to get the job done on the ground. The problem with Mena is obviously his conditioning, his cardio. I mean, he's coming off of a very competitive split decision win over Akiyama. That was a pretty interesting fight for sure. He kind of gassed out. He put everything he pretty much had into the second round, almost finishing Akiyama. And then obviously he gassed himself and Akiyama was able to take over round three. But overall, Mena is a very dangerous fighter. And I think if it gets deep, then of course Mena could be in some trouble here against Pyle because Pyle's conditioning is better than Mena's, but Pyle's going to slow up a little bit as well. And I don't think it's going to go that deep, basically, is what I'm trying to say. I think Mena's going to probably finish Pyle early on and we're going to see Pyle maybe think about hanging him up. I mean, at age 40, like I said, he's fought everybody there is to fight. I'm not sure what there's left for Pyle to do. So we'll see what happens if he does lose this fight. But overall, I do have to side with Mena. Again, it's one of those fights that you can't really trust Mena all that much because he does some crazy stuff. Defensively, he's even a head scratcher at times. And then again, his cardio, but overall, I think he's dangerous enough and he's got to kind of put everything together at the right time and probably finish Pyle. So I'm expecting Mena to finish Pyle and I'm going to lean with Mena in this fight.
Yeah, this fight's really interesting because Mike Pyle, maybe about 5 years ago, probably runs through Alberto Mena. And I'll admit, I have underestimated Mena a little bit. UFC debut was a sloppy mess where both fighters were just landing haymakers on each other and he wound up on top. But then he goes out there against Akiyama and is a lot more composed. He started training at King's MMA, his technique improved, and he won the first two rounds against Akiyama by being the better striker and landing a big shot and almost finishing him at the end of the second round. But then, you know, expending that much energy at the end of the second round, he was completely gassed in the third and barely survived it. So Mena's conditioning is a serious problem. And if this fight gets into the third round, I think, you know, Mike Pyle is definitely a live dog at that point in terms of live betting. So that is something to keep in mind. But for the most part, I think Alberto Mena's technique is improving. His power is definitely there. And Mike Pyle's chin is just completely gone. You saw that in the Sean Spencer fight where, you know, he was so close to being put out multiple times. I could not believe that he didn't get finished. And throughout his career, Mike Pyle has, you know, been completely steamrolled in some fights by guys like Jordan Meehan, by Matt Brown, by Rory McDonald, by Jake Ellenberger. know, you name it, against, you know, people that are a little bit better with him, than him with some big power, they usually put him away. So that is something you definitely have to keep in mind. And the fact that Mike Pyle is 40 years old now. There are not many welterweights, especially, that are competing at 40 years old. So I think Alberto Mina can definitely finish this fight in the first round, maybe the second. And the only real question mark is if Mina hurts him and doesn't finish him, Pyle could come back. So as you saw in the Sean Spencer fight, actually, where Spencer got a little tired, Pyle caught him late and then picked up a finish in the last minute or two and was a huge come-from-behind victory. So that is something to keep in mind. But I do think Alberto Mina's striking is getting significantly better at this point, especially with the time he's been putting in at King's MMA. So I expect Alberto Mina to pick up the win here. So I'm picking Alberto Mina. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Joe Duffy, who is 14-2, taking on Mitch Clark, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Duffy -315, the comeback on Clark +235, and right now it's Duffy -370. Clark is at +310. Not really that surprising. I mean, Duffy is definitely the more popular fighter. I mean, holding a win over Conor McGregor, even if it was a while back alone, for those people that are just kind of clicking through records and looking and checking out fighters that way, that's impressive enough. And some people, the squares of the world, are just going to bet Duffy because of that kind of stuff, which is silliness. I realize that. But there is people, believe it or not, that still do that kind of crap. So anyway, as far as this matchup goes, it's not an easy matchup for Duffy because he was exposed a little bit. I realize that he's kind of taken a step down because Poirier in his last fight, which was a tough fight, and he hung in there, and he actually gave Poirier quite a fight along the way as well. So it was a tough loss, but in a competitive fight, but he did lose to Poirier, and he got exposed a little bit on the ground. I mean, he got taken down. He was able to get controlled that way, got beat up a little bit as well. And Clark, that's exactly what he wants to do here. He wants to get this fight to the ground more so than anything and then work his submission game because Clark does excel on the ground. Even though Duffy has a unique sub game in his own right, I still think on the ground, that's where Clark has the advantage in his spot. So Duffy has to be careful. It's going to be tough for Clark to get Duffy to the ground, though. I don't think it's going to be as easy as it was for Poirier. So that's why you're seeing Duffy obviously being a solid favorite here. And then on the feet, obviously, Duffy does have the advantage. I mean, he's got good striking. He can definitely do some damage along the way. Clark's a tough guy to finish, so it's going to be tough to get him out of there. But Duffy's one of those guys that is a finisher, and he's capable of finishing anywhere the fight takes place. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Duffy does catch Clark, even though Clark is a tough guy to finish. So overall, I think that it's Duffy's fight to win or lose, but he has to be cautious. I mean, look what I Quinta did to Clark. He was winning that fight. I mean, he was dominant in that fight and then made a mistake, got caught in the wrong spot. That was an impressive choke from Clark that got him beat there. And I think Clark, if he does, I mean, he has some pretty slick chokes. And if he does take Duffy's back, it's a wrap. I mean, I think he can win this fight by submission as well. So Duffy has to be cautious. But if he can avoid getting submitted, he probably wins this fight. So I'm going to lean Duffy now. Where the line currently is, people are crazy if they're just going to jump in and just keep on betting Duffy or put him in parlays where it's at right now, because there's really no true value left, I think, at the line at least. Maybe on the opener, I can understand people thinking it's a little low, jumping in there a little bit, but now where it's at, almost 4-1, got to stay away from it. I mean, because Clark is just getting a little bit too much disrespect here. So I'm going to lean Duffy. But I'm going to honestly be pulling for probably Clark to pull off the upset. You got to love a good dog or two to hit, even if you're on him or not on him. I mean, it makes the whole card interesting and fun, especially in a spot like this where Clark is not getting that much respect. It'd be kind of nice to see him get the win. But for my official pick, it is going to be Duffy.
Joe Duffy has had historically some issues with submission artists. You saw it on The Ultimate Fighter. You saw it even in his last fight. You know, Dustin Poirier was able to get him on his back and keep him down for a significant portion of the fight. So if Mitch Clark is able to get Duffy on the ground, then this becomes a completely different fight. That being said, Clark is not exactly a big wrestling threat. He doesn't have amazing takedowns. He's not extremely athletic, and most of his wins have come where, you know, his opponent did something to bring the fight to the floor, like the Iaquinta bonehead move. So for the most part, if Joe Duffy is smart, he keeps his fight standing. He does not get over aggressive on the feet, even though he should have a huge advantage there. And he just picks his spots and picks Clark apart on the feet. Clark should have no inkling of a chance to hang with Duffy in the stand-up portion. And while Duffy's ground is getting better, I mean, he did pull off a submission in his second UFC fight, but that's just not an area that he wants to screw around with against Mitch Clark, because that's the only way Mitch Clark can win. So as long as Duffy's fight IQ is good, as long as he is fights intelligently and smartly and keeps his distance and lands strikes from the distance, he should win this fight easy. He can easily take a decision, and if he feels and senses it, maybe he can turn up the aggression a little bit on the feet and go for the knockout. But this is an easy decision if Joe Duffy wants it. He just has to not make a mistake and not get put on his back and not slip or do anything silly. So my pick is going to be Joe Duffy here. Now, moving back up to the welterweight division, we have Alan Joban, who is 13-4, taking on UFC newcomer Bilal Muhammad, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Joban, minus 135. The comeback on Muhammad, minus 105. This line has been flipping back and forth like crazy. One of those type of fights. Right now, it's Joban minus 125. The comeback on Muhammad is plus 105. So line margins have basically tightened up since the opener. Still almost at the same spot. Slight lean towards Joban in basically a pick-em type of fight. And that tells you a lot right there. For those of you guys that are unfamiliar with Muhammad, Joban is a fairly popular fighter. We all know what he brings to the table with his striking game. I mean, the guy is a beast on the feet offensively. I mean, he brings it. He has knockout power. He's pretty slick with the striking. He's got decent takedown defense. He's just, I mean, one of those fighters that you enjoy watching fight because he's in a firefight. I mean, he's going to lay it all on the line. He has a pretty good chin overall. He has been knocked out a couple times, though, but he's the type of fighter that in most cases he gets clipped, he can recover, and then he's back in a fight. And man, I mean, it's hard to deal with a guy like Joban with all of his pressure. And of course, he's getting better. He's training at Black House. He's training at with Eddie Bravo and crew at 10th Planet as well. So his ground's getting better, always improving. And the guy's a very marketable fighter. So for it to be this type of fight, this competitive line, it tells you a lot about Muhammad, as I said. I mean, he's taking this fight on short notice to boot. He's stepping in for Taleb. So Muhammad, I am impressed with him. And I opened it this tight because I do think it's a winnable fight for Muhammad. I mean, he has a wrestling and boxing background. A lot of it, you see more of his boxing kind of show through than anything else. I mean, he's a well-rounded prospect overall. I'm really impressed on the feet with his constant improvement. I mean, if you look at fight by fight, he does get better. I mean, his footwork and head movement make him really hard to hit on the feet. He counters well. He's got good accuracy. So defensively, I like what I see. I think it's going to be hard for Joban to actually land frequently on Muhammad with his movement. His boxing is very on point as well. He mixes in kicks effectively, especially his low kicks. And he's got pretty good takedown defense. And he's pretty fast and quick with the scrambles as well. So I like what I see from Muhammad. He even throws in body work, which, I mean, once he gets going and once he targets in on your body on the feet, I mean, he could be a nightmare to deal with for sure. He gave, actually, in his last fight, he gave Carl a beating that way, winning the title, of welterweight title in Titan as well. So for outside of the UFC and just making his debut in the UFC, his resume is actually not too bad. I mean, he's faced decent competition along the way. So there's a lot of good things to like about Muhammad. And I think the way he matches up with Joban here, it's going to be a competitive fight for sure, because Joban's going to bring it. And Muhammad's going to be the one kind of on his bicycle a little bit. He's going to be using his footwork and movement to kind of react to Joban's aggressiveness, and I think Muhammad's going to be able to land enough and pick him apart a little bit. I wouldn't even be surprised if Muhammad actually finishes Joban. Muhammad's not really known to be a huge knockout threat, but he does have it in him, and especially as the fight goes on, he kind of wears at you. Again, mixing everything in, including those body shots, kind of takes a toll. So I like what I see from Muhammad. I think he can win on the scorecards here. I think he could actually possibly finish Joban as well. And I think it's going to be harder for Joban to actually finish Muhammad. So I lean Muhammad here. I think he's going to be successful even on short notice in his UFC debut. And we'll see. I mean, if he gets a little bit of confidence, we'll see how far he can go. Muhammad can go in this welterweight division if he does get the win over Joban here in this spot, which I do like. So I am going to pick Muhammad to win.
This fight is surprisingly competitive. The main thing here is Alan Joban is a very powerful striker, and he does have a very good aggressive skill set on the feet, But Bilal Muhammad, do not sleep on this guy. He is a very talented stand-up artist. He doesn't have a lot of power, but he makes up for it with solid technique and an extremely high pace and excellent conditioning. So what I expect this fight to take place, or how I expect this fight to take place on the feet, is Joe Ban trying to put the pressure on Muhammad, and then Muhammad working the edges and picking his spots and just annoying Joe Ban, and then eventually maybe landing that good shot. Now, Muhammad doesn't have a ton of power, but he can kill you with that death by a thousand cuts on the feet, where he just wears you down, and eventually you start to get tired. Those shots start to add up. You start to swell. Maybe you get some cuts, and then he can get a finish like he did against Steve Carl. That was an extremely impressive performance that won him the Titan welterweight title. Now, Muhammad also does have a decent ground game. It's nothing crazy, but it's as good, if not better, than Joe Ban's. So I think that they'll cancel each other out a little bit, and this fight is most likely going to take place for the most part in the feet and maybe in the clinch a little bit too. Realistically, if Muhammad can keep his distance and pick his shots and dictate the pace and make this a high-energy fight and a more technical fight, then Muhammad can win. If Joe Ban turns it into a firefight, into a slugfest, even though Joe Ban's chin is definitely questionable, that is definitely the type of fight that he wants to have. And if Muhammad gets suckered into more of a brawl style, then some of that technique is thrown out the window, and Joe Ban could definitely win that. But for the most part, I think Muhammad, who is a devout Muslim and is actually training right now during Ramadan, where you're not allowed to eat or drink water during the day. So that is a very unique situation. But I do expect him to continue to push a high pace and maybe wear Joe Ban out and either win a decision late or pick up a late TKO at some point. So my pick is actually also going to be Bilal Muhammad. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a heavyweight contest between Roy Big Country Nelson, who is 22-12, taking on Derek Lewis, who is 15-4 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Nelson, minus 170, the comeback on Lewis, plus 130. Right now, it's Nelson, minus 135, the comeback on Lewis is plus 115, so Lewis, the beast, getting some respect from the bettors out there. And man, I mean, based on his last few performances, I understand it. The guy overall, a heck of a fighter to deal with. I mean, just the way he goes about his aggressiveness. I mean, his power once he gets on top, on the ground especially, is ridiculous. I mean, the guy could definitely finish fights. And then the crazy thing about Lewis is he can be put on his back. He can be out-wrestled, but he scrambles up fairly well for a big man. Hard to submit. I mean, there's a lot of weird things about Lewis coming into play in most of his fights that you wouldn't expect. And I mean, he's pretty athletic for his size. He's got power. He's got a lot of great things going for him. I mean, he's just not easy to deal with, even with a veteran like Nelson. But at the same time, I'm not as confident as everybody else taking him. I mean, matchups are everything, and you got to look at the matchup here that he's got with Nelson. And I mean, is he going to get on top of Nelson on the ground? I guess it's possible, but I doubt it. I don't think it's going to happen here. I mean, Roy Nelson, in most cases, is the type of guy that obviously we all know, one-punch knockout power. I mean, he usually gets the job done early, and a lot of people can't withstand his power. He has decent takedown defense overall, though. He's not an easy guy to bully around and put on the floor. But obviously, we all know as the fight wears on a little bit, Nelson tends to slow down a little bit, and he doesn't have as much success on the scorecards as you'd like. But that being said, here against Lewis, is Lewis going to be able to get this fight to the ground and get on top of him? I don't think he will. And I think on the feet, is Lewis a better striker overall than Nelson? He is going to be a little bit longer for sure. So in the clinch, you might be effective, maybe landing some knees and trying to just land hard shots and dirty box a little bit and just kind of make it an ugly type of fight for Nelson and kind of pin him up against the cage and control him. But I don't think he's going to have a lot of success doing that either. And Nelson is the type of fighter that, man, he picks his spots and he lands those shots and he puts people out. And Lewis has been knocked out before too. I mean, one punch type of knockout. So Nelson can KO Lewis. I think it's going to be tougher for Lewis to KO Nelson. And if it hits the scorecards, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, obviously Nelson doesn't typically win decisions. So that should favor Lewis in this spot, but Lewis doesn't really go to the cards that often either. So this is a crazy head scratcher type of fight. I do lean a little bit more towards Nelson because honestly, even though Lewis is a beast, I can't see him kind of surviving Nelson's big power. And I think Nelson does land that big shot, clips him, puts him down, and that's it for Lewis. I mean, obviously right now, Lewis is the younger fighter. I mean, I'm sure even the UFC would like to see him come through here against Nelson, and it'd be a heck of a win on his resume. Because Nelson's is aging. He's been around for a long time. I mean, there's not a ton of value in Nelson at this point because you're not going to push him towards a title shot. And Lewis, even though he's not ready for a title shot, he could be in the mix. He's getting more popular. I mean, his social media is attracting a lot of fans out there. A lot of people like him and it's hard not to like a guy like Lewis. I mean, I understand it all, but still we have to consider the matchup in this stylistic matchup. I think Nelson kind of gets the job done here and probably KOs Lewis. So I'm going to go against the grain here. There's more action coming in on Lewis. I'm going to back Nelson here. I think Nelson probably knocks Lewis out along the way. So I'm going to pick Nelson to win.
Derrick Lewis is on quite the streak. If you check out his record, basically his last 14 fights have ended due to strikes. Only one of them was not a TKO or KO. Because it was ended by disqualification due to punches to the back of the head or a no contest. But, I mean, this guy is all about power. Lewis looks to get in your face and usually take you down and then just destroy you with these massive Donkey Kong ground and pound that he does. And it's ferocious. And if he connects, you're in big, big trouble. And his stand-up is coming along. It still is not great, as evidenced by his losses to Matt Mitrione and Sean Jordan on the feet. But his stand-up, he did really hurt Victor Pesta on the feet in their fight in the second round. And then Gonzaga, he ended up knocking him out with a punch on the feet. So Lewis is definitely dangerous, but his problem here is he's facing one of the most dangerous stand-up artists in the UFC heavyweight division in Roy Nelson. Roy Nelson has an iron chin, just completely made of granite, and he packs an insane wallop in that right hand. So what you're going to see here is probably Roy Nelson trying to take Lewis's head off on the feet and Lewis trying to maybe get some takedowns and then get top position, because even though Roy Nelson is tough as nails, if Lewis gets on top of him on the ground, Nelson's in big trouble. But I don't think Lewis can outstrike Roy Nelson, even though Nelson isn't a great technical striker. He is aggressive on the feet, and all it really takes is even just a grazing blow, and I think Lewis is going to be in big trouble. Lewis's chin is not even half as durable as Roy Nelson's. So I think Roy Nelson should be throwing caution to the wind and just getting in Lewis's face and trying to land that big shot. And if he lands it, then Derrick Lewis is going to be in huge, huge trouble. Now, Lewis is the bigger guy. He's got 7 inches in reach. He's 3 inches taller. But I don't think that's going to matter nearly as much because Roy Nelson just puts the pressure on you. And if he lands that overhand right, it's night-night. So I think at some point in this fight, Roy Nelson lands that big bomb, and it's time to go to Burger King for a celebration for big country. So my pick is going to be Roy Nelson. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have Rafael Dos Anjos, who is 24-7, defending his UFC lightweight championship against Eddie Alvarez, who is 27-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Awesome fight, really. Both guys deserving of this spot. I opened Dos Anjos -300, the comeback on Alvarez +240. Wasn't quite enough. Right now it's Dos Anjos -370, the comeback on Alvarez is +310. So this line has been out for a while as well, and the betting action has kind of obviously increased the line on Dos Anjos. Stylistically, it is a tough matchup for Alvarez because you would think Dos Anjos has been a beast. I mean, he's looked great. It looks like he's at the best spot that he's ever been. I mean, fight by fight, he's beaten quality opponents as of late. I mean, just pulled off some unexpected victories. I mean, even the, now going back to the Pettis fight, I know it's been a while, but still what he did to Pettis and how dominant he was in that fight and with his cardio holding up everything. And on top of it, he was injured, for crying out loud. I mean, not many people up to at that time, at least, have done that. So that was impressive. Just everything about Dos Anjos. I mean, he's definitely at the best point of his career that he's ever been. I mean, mentally, and again, the physical aspect of the game and the mental aspect of the game is at an all-time high for Dos Anjos. He deserves to be champion. I know Habib has something to say about that, but we'll see if that ever happens or whatnot. So this is a tough matchup for Alvarez, considering, in my opinion, Alvarez looks to be a kind of a declining fighter in some ways. I know it's kind of unfair to say because Alvarez has bounced back after his debut loss to Cerrone in the UFC, which was a brutal fight for him. I mean, he was looking okay in that fight, but overall, I mean, he took, you know, some punishment there as well. So after that, though, he bounced back. And he got a pretty tough decision win over Melendez and a pretty tough decision win over Pettis to earn his spot here at the title. So two guys that, again, have not really performed the best as of late, but still quality wins for Alvarez. And then before that, we all know he was a Bellator champ. So he was right in the title mix. When the UFC brought him in, Alvarez was expected to be in the title mix right away anyway. So he's here. He's working hard. He looks to be ready. I mean, from listening to his interviews and everything that he's stated this far, mentally he seems ready as well. But it is going to be a tough fight for him. I mean, matching up skill set for skill set, these guys are very similar. Both these guys are good strikers. Both these guys like to wrestle. Both these guys like to use their submission games as well. I just don't think that Alvarez really has any area that he excels a lot more than Dos Anjos. I think Dos Anjos basically has the check marks again across the board overall in this fight. Minus the intriguing factor here would be the wrestling, I think, for me the most. Dos Anjos has pretty good takedown defense. His wrestling has been on point for a while now, but certain fights, I mean, Habib is one of them. And again, Habib's almost a different beast at this point. So it's not even compare a lot of wrestlers and grinders to Habib because of how dominant he is doing so. But that being said, there is a way to beat Dos Anjos, and it is kind of controlling him, slowing the fight down, pinning him up against the cage, getting some takedowns from time to time. And Alvarez is definitely going to look to do that along the way. So it is going to be interesting because I think that none of us can really predict who is going to be able to control the wrestling aspect of this fight. It seems to be close. A lot of people would actually say RDA probably has the advantage in that spot here. But Alvarez is a pretty tough guy to take down. And I think RDA's takedown defense might be a little bit worse than Alvarez as well. So with the smart game plan, and if he has the ability to slow down this fight and make it kind of a boring type of slow-paced fight, Alvarez could very well pull off a decision here in this spot, but it is going to be tough. I realize that, and I still got to favor Dos Anjos. Just, I mean, if you look at who's looked better lately, even though Alvarez has a couple quality wins, it's still Dos Anjos. I mean, Dos Anjos looks like he's on a mission, and that mission is probably going to last for a while. I mean, he's going to be successful doing so for a while until he matches up with somebody like Habib again. I think Dos Anjos has looked great. So I'm going to pick Dos Anjos to win. I think the line is a tad high because I'm expecting it to be competitive. I mean, both you guys, these guys again are going to strike at times and be successful doing so against each other. And both these guys are definitely going to have their moments in this fight. So I'm not expecting Dos Anjos to go out here and just blow Alvarez away, but I do expect him to probably get the win here. So he's a solid favorite for a reason. I understand it. I expect him to probably get the job done here. But again, part of me would like to see Alvarez win, come over to the UFC after a couple fights. I know he's been working extremely hard. This would be a great career defining moment for him. And, you know, all the hard work he's put in through the years, it'd be kind of nice to see him get the job done here. But it's going to be a hard task because Dos Anjos is a stud right now, and especially where he's at. So I'm going to pick Dos Anjos to win. But at minus 370, almost 400, I do think the line's a tad high. So cautious out there if you are putting him in a parlay.
Rafael Dos Anjos has evolved and become one of the most well-rounded and dangerous fighters in the entire UFC roster. I mean, his stand-up is on point. His punches have incredible power. His technique is excellent. His kicks are lethal. And then he's behind that. He's backed by an incredible ground game that he hasn't even had to showcase that much recently. And honestly, he is becoming more and more a fighter without many flaws. Now, obviously, you can go back all the way to his UFC debut when he got knocked out by Jeremy Stephens and say he has a bad chin or something. Or you can go and talk about the time that Clay Guida broke his jaw and then put him in like a vice grip and forced a submission. But those were ages ago. He has won 10 of his last 11 fights, and he has not been fighting slouches. I mean, you just look at the people he defeated during these stretches. Evan Dunham, Donald Cerrone again, Benson Henderson, Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And the only guy that's had his number was Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's a fighter that is extremely difficult to defeat, and I don't know if Eddie Alvarez has that skill set to take advantage of any of the apparent weaknesses in Dos Anjos's game. I mean, as of now, it seems like the only guy that can beat Dos Anjos is somebody that can take him down repeatedly, avoid any submission trouble at all, and then just wear him down. And I don't know if Eddie Alvarez can do that. Alvarez does have good wrestling. I mean, he took down Gilbert Melendez repeatedly. He put good pressure on Anthony Pettis and was able to get a couple takedowns against him. But I don't know if Alvarez can get the takedowns against Dos Anjos. I think it's going to be really difficult for him. Alvarez also is a bit more of a boxer, although his kicking game is developing a little bit. And I don't think on the feet, Alvarez can really hang with Dos Anjos. I mean, you saw his nose got broken against Melendez on the feet, and that was mainly just from Melendez's boxing. I think if you mix in the kicks here, then Alvarez can get himself in a world of hurt. The best area for Alvarez to get things going would be on the inside, like in his UFC debut against Cerrone, when he got almost into the clinch area and just started pounding away on Cerrone with uppercuts on the inside repeatedly. That could work. And the fact that Alvarez has had multiple 5-round fights is to his advantage, from his time as a Bellator champion and defending his title, those epic wars with Michael Chandler. That definitely is great experience, and it's good to know that he can go 5 rounds hard and hang in there. But my big issue is Alvarez is hittable. His defense has never been great, and when he does get hit, bad things usually happen. He gets dropped or rocked in almost every one of his fights, or injured, or, you know, his face swells up like in the Gilbert Melendez fight when he blew his nose after getting it broken, after he broke an eye socket. So I do think that against somebody as lethal as Rafael Dos Anjos, at some point Dos Anjos is going to connect with something nasty, and then he's just going to put it on him. So even though the blueprint is kind of there for Alvarez to pursue takedowns, try to get top position, and then maybe work on the inside with some uppercuts and pressure, I don't think he can pull that off for 5 rounds. And I don't see Alvarez really getting a finish here either. So my pick is going to be Rafael Dos Anjos successfully defending his UFC lightweight title. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 90. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Wednesday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAoddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of the homepage. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this week.